Greetings, listeners and friends of RAOTC. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old-Timers Club of Australia, saying welcome to this broadcast for December 2018. You know by now that this broadcast is carried on a range of frequencies on the first Monday morning of every month, except for January. However, please don't forget the repeat transmissions at night at 10:30 UTC, on 80 metres in Melbourne, and in Tasmania via a telecast. These details can all be found on our webpage, www.raotc.org.au, and we again thank all of our volunteers who relay this program at the various times. I am Bruce Bathholz, VK3UV, your presenter for the moment. And Ian sends his greetings on what will be the last time that Ian and I join forces to present this monthly broadcast. Due to a technical issue I discovered just prior to sending this audio file out to our relay volunteers, this next section of Ian's has been re-recorded by me. However, you will hear from Ian later in the broadcast. Ian states, "It has been an interesting 2 years, and I hope that you have taken something useful from what we have presented to you. It is not easy to find suitable material for these broadcasts, apart from the routine club news, but care in looking at various sources usually turns up something that I hoped would be of interest. We would like to thank all of our volunteers who have helped with the relaying of this broadcast on HF. This is quite a commitment, being available each first Monday at a specific time. Sometimes things have gone a little wrong, but overall, we have coped and kept the program available to you. This does not mean that we don't need any help with the continuation of these broadcasts. We do, as regular listeners will know from broadcasts in recent months. Without this help, there is still a possibility that the broadcasts may peter out. But something will be said about this towards the end of this transmission. We especially thank the committee and members of the EMDRC for permission to use VK3REC for our monthly broadcasts in the Melbourne area. This has been invaluable in dissemination of our news, even though at times I have not provided the most technically perfect audio through the repeater, for which we apologise most sincerely. Ian says that he is not a deeply technical person, but he has learned a lot and enjoyed the efforts of the presentation. Now here is some club news for you. The quarterly meeting of the RAOTC committee was held on Thursday the 15th of November. Our new president, David Rosenfield, VK3ADM, chaired the meeting, and there were 6 members present. The various reports showed that the RAOTC is in good shape. The Treasurer's report showed that we are in a very good financial position, and the annual figures will be published in OTN Journal in due course. Our membership is static at around 480, but it has been dropping a little due to age-related issues and members becoming silent keys. You can help by mentioning the RAOTC to your amateur friends in becoming a member. An updated interactive membership form is being tested on our website and came in for a lot of discussion. OTN Journal is being published twice yearly, and our untiring editor Bill Roper, VK3BR, was again congratulated in maintaining his dedication and support to OTN. Our website, www.raotc.org.au, is being regularly maintained by Andrew Walton, VK3CAH. The website itself attracts quite a lot of traffic each month, and we have almost reached our storage limit in what we can put onto the website. A quote to increase this limit will be obtained from our web host. Also, the website itself was designed over 20 years ago, using software available at that time. It does now lack interaction abilities, and ongoing discussions are being held with a view to update the overall look and feel of the website. The R8OTC broadcasts came in for a lot of discussion. Originally, the broadcast was HF-related, but this has now changed due to the current changing HF conditions. We are fortunate to have support from most states with VHF repeater relays, and this area is being expanded. We are looking for assistance in obtaining suitable material for future broadcasts, and members are being asked to do some research in finding suitable historical items in various amateur radio and technical publications. Items of general technical interest are also welcome. The winner of the 2018 Stuart Day Award was Clive Wallace, VK6CSW. Clive was congratulated and acknowledged for his ongoing support and his excellent articles published in OTN over the past year. I now present information on new and deceased members. It is with great pleasure that this month we welcome into membership another lady operator in Leslie Smith, VK5LOL, previous call sign VK5HLS, who became new associate member number 1753 on the 11th of November 2018. We are also pleased to welcome Bob Ronay, VK4BOB and VK2BAB, previous call signs 5Whiskey0BOB and VK2ZRZ. Bob became full member number 1754 on the 18th of November this year. We welcome Greg McNamara, VK3UT and VK3DX, previous call sign VK3BIB, who became full member number 1755 on the 19th of November. On the same day, we also welcome Dennis Babour, VK3BGS, previous call signs VK3VDJ and VK3KJB, who became full member number 1756, and Bob Hildebrand, VK3BAY, previous call sign VK3VAY, who became full member number 1757. Five new members in 1 month is a most welcome surprise. It shows what can be done with decent advertising and encouragement from existing members. Welcome to you all. We hope that you will find your time in RAOTC interesting and rewarding. Perhaps, Leslie, you will be able to tell us some time of your experiences as a YL operator. Now, it is with sadness that we have been advised that Brian Woods, VK2AZI, member number 1515, became a silent key during September of 2018. Let us pause a moment in memory of our departed colleague. Thank you. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia. Now here is Ian to introduce his first talk.
Our first talk this month is more of a feature. That is, it is a little longer than just an ordinary talk that you hear. However, it speaks of the life and work of a lady who, like others that you have heard about recently, has not received the recognition that she deserves. The original article appeared in Cosmos magazine earlier this year.
I wonder if you've heard of Mary Somerville. Perhaps not, but as part of our program this year to celebrate women who have made significant contributions to the development of mathematics and science, here is an article from Robin Arianhod, a senior adjunct research fellow at the School of Mathematical Sciences at Monash University. Her particular fields of research are general relativity and the history of mathematical science. When the Royal Bank of Scotland, RBS, issues its new £10 note toward the end of 2017, the 19th century's Queen of Science will surely inspire new generations in her homeland. But the legacy of self-taught mathematician Mary Fairfax Somerville reaches way beyond Scotland. She was a brilliant translator of science for the public and a passionate advocate for women's education. The RBS's new polymer note shows Mary as a young woman, but she was 50 years old by the time she shot to fame in 1831 after the publication of her cutting-edge Mechanism of the Heavens. Academics were astounded. It was said that no more than 5 men in Britain were capable of writing such a demanding book, based as it was on the work of leading French mathematician Pierre-Simon Laplace. It was a phenomenal achievement for a woman who taught herself science and mathematics at a time when most universities did not admit females. Mechanism of the Heavens was not just a momentary curiosity. It was used as a textbook in Cambridge's advanced mathematical astronomy classes for the next century. This latest accolade stems from RBS's decision to issue its first polymer banknotes. For the new banknote, Somerville was selected in an online competition. She garnered many votes from students at Somerville College, Oxford's first women's college. It became coeducational in 1994, was named after her in 1879, just a few years too late for her to enjoy the honour. She died in 1872, just short of 92 years of age. Mary Fairfax, who later married physician William Somerville, was born in Jedburgh, close to the border with England, but raised in Burntisland, just across the picturesque Firth of Forth, north of Edinburgh. The old whitewashed house where she grew up still stands, in what is now Somerville Square. A plaque above the doorway acknowledges its famous former student, but the house is rather run down today. There is no sign of the spacious garden where Mary's mother grew fruit and vegetables to feed the family. Her father's naval pay was poor, despite his eventual rise to the position of Vice Admiral. But the common where the family's cow grazed still exists, as does the nearby church they attended. And, of course, there is the beach, whose shoreline is depicted in the design of the new banknote. It is a symbolic choice. Educational wisdom at the time held that because women weren't as strong as men and had smaller brains, academic study should damage girls' health or even send them mad. Consequently, while her brothers were sent to school, Mary was relegated to home duties. Her only diversion was roaming the beach with the seabirds for companions. Not surprisingly, she grew up, as she later put it, a wild creature. Even in her teens, she was virtually illiterate and innumerate, despite an utterly wretched year at a boarding school when she was 10. But Burntisland's rocks, birds, plants and stars inspired a wondrous curiosity about the natural world. She was determined to understand the way nature worked. As for mathematics, her interest was kindled by tamer pursuits. In the mid-1790s, when she was 15, an older girl showed her a women's magazine containing sewing patterns. Mary's eye was taken not by the exquisite needlework, but by a collection of X's and Y's arranged in strange, alluring patterns. It was a solution to one of the magazine's mathematical puzzles, whose popularity testified to the intellectual hunger amongst many women. Her friend knew only that they call it algebra, but these magical symbols fired Mary with an indomitable desire to speak this secret language. It took her many years, and she did it mostly alone. When Britain's scientists and mathematicians were finally exposed to her erudition, they were stunned. Her introduction to London's Scientific Society had followed her 1812 marriage to Dr. Somerville, who was supportive of his wife's intellectual attainments. Through him, she met leading scientists on both sides of the Channel, including Laplace. Some years later, Lord Henry Brougham, co-founder of the liberal Edinburgh Review, invited her to write on Laplace's work. When she finished her Mechanism of the Heavens, however, Brougham thought it too academic for the self-improvement book for technical professionals he had envisaged. Eventually, the innovative publisher John Murray took a chance on it, catapulting Mary to fame. Understanding Laplace's work required knowledge of the user-friendly form of calculus that German mathematician Gottfried Leibniz had developed, and which is now universally taught in high schools. British mathematicians were still teaching Isaac Newton's more opaque symbolism, but because she was self-taught, Mary had bypassed this and taught herself Leibniz's continental calculus, along with the Latin required to read Newton's Principia, and the French to read Laplace's monumental follow-up work, Mécanique Céleste, Celestial Mechanics. Laplace's update of Principia had made him deservedly famous, but his celebrity hinged on his resolution of a conundrum. Was the solar system stable? The controversy had begun a century earlier. Newton's theory of gravity had suggested it was not. Early opponents of Newton's theory, such as Leibniz, had favoured the ancient idea of the ether, unseen cosmic vortices carrying the planets in their wake. It was also assumed that God had set these ethereal whirlpools in perpetual motion to create a perfectly stable solar system. The planetary motions certainly seemed stable, but Newton followed the logical consequences of his gravitational theory. His famous inverse square law gave rise to an elliptical orbit taking account of the mutual gravity between the Sun and a planet, but each planet's orbit would be distorted by the additional gravity of nearby bodies, so Newton predicted that, far into the future, the accumulated distortions of all the orbits would lead to chaos. Laplace and Joseph-Louis Lagrange undertook the Herculean task of applying Newton's law to gravity to all planets, moons and other known bodies in the solar system. They eventually found the resulting distortions in the various orbits do increase and decrease over millennia, but within such narrow limits the whole system remains stable. Today, chaos theory tells us the solar system is inherently unstable, but models suggest we're unlikely to see any disastrous planetary collisions within the Sun's lifetime. The use of Newton's law alone to show the long-term stability of the solar system was a great victory for the theory of gravity and generated enormous excitement amongst mathematical physicists. Mary's Mechanism of the Heavens made that excitement accessible to a broader audience of physicists and university students because she explained the mathematical reasoning underlying the relevant conclusions in Laplace's monumental Mécanique Céleste. Her next book, On the Connection of the Physical Sciences, was published in 1834. It was popular rather than academic, and soon became a bestseller also, translated into Italian and German. It captured the spirit of the times. The sense that scientists were connecting the dots to reveal a unified cosmic scheme. For instance, the connection between electricity and magnetism was big news. That these seemingly separate phenomena were two sides of the same coin had only recently been demonstrated by Michael Faraday. In 1831, 10 years after Denmark's Hans Ørsted discovered electricity can induce magnetism, Faraday found the converse, generating electricity simply by moving a magnet through a coil of wire. Connection had benefited from Mary's friendship with many of the leading scientists of the day. As well as Laplace and Faraday, she also knew Thomas Young, who proposed the wave theory of light, Charles Babbage, the computer pioneer, and his collaborator, Ada Lovelace, who she tutored and mentored. Mary could not believe such people took notice of her. She always saw herself as a backwoods Scottish girl with no formal education. Through this circle, she learned firsthand about the latest developments in physics, although she was no stranger to scientific experimentation. In 1826, she had her first paper published in Philosophical Translations of the Royal Society. She and German-born British astronomer Caroline Herschel were the first women published in this prestigious magazine. Mary's paper described her experiments on the possible connection between magnetism and light. No one knew then that light itself was electromagnetic, but experimenters were beginning to wonder if light and magnetism could affect each other. Her conclusions, though praised for their originality, were ultimately proven incorrect, as is often the way in science. The first definitive evidence of a connection between light and magnetism was found by Faraday 20 years later in 1846. James Clerk Maxwell would complete the puzzle with his electromagnetic theory of light in 1864. In connection, she also conjectured that observed distortions in the orbit of Uranus, discovered by her friend William Herschel, Caroline's brother, might be due to the effects of a body as yet unseen. Neptune was duly discovered in 1846 as a result of independent calculations using Newton's theory by Englishman John Couch Adams and Frenchman Urbain Le Verrier. Adams later said his search for the planet had been inspired by the passage in Mary's book. Perhaps there is no better testament to Somerville's writing than the opinion of one of the men she defeated in RBS's public poll, James Clerk Maxwell, the ultimate 19th century unifier who theorised the connection between electricity, magnetism and light. He said her second book put into definite, intelligible and communicable form the guiding ideas that already working in the minds of men of science, but which they cannot yet shape into a definitive statement. Mary's next book, Physical Geography, published in 1848, was both successful and controversial, because it included discussion of the new science of geology. The use of rocks and fossils to understand the Earth's history put its age far beyond the biblical estimation of 6,000 years or so. Mary later recalled that this aroused more controversy than Darwin's theory of evolution. Her fourth book, On Molecular and Microscopic Sciences, published in 1869, was, by her own account, a great mistake. By then 88 years old, she no longer moved in scientific circles, and the book lacked the cutting-edge freshness of her earlier works. Everyone seemed to love and admire Mary Somerville. She was showered with honours, including a government pension awarded to important writers and scientists. Even the Royal Society, which did not admit female members at the time, erected her bust in its Great Hall, and the Royal Astronomical Society made her an honorary member along with Caroline Herschel in 1835. After her death, her story lay dormant for a century, until scholars went searching for historical female role models to show girls that it was culture, not biology, that limited women's participation in science. Mary Somerville's triumph against such great odds makes her story particularly resonant. At 91, while studying the new mathematical topic of quaternions, she revealed one of the secrets of her success. Whenever she encountered a difficulty, she remained calm but determined because, quote, "If I do not succeed today, I will attack the problem again on the morrow," end of quote. She helped pioneer the way for women in science, but her approach to life remains timeless.
This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia.
Our second talk this month is something that will probably happen to most of us, if it has not already done so.
Here's an article from Jake Port, a writer with Cosmos magazine, the sort of article which is short and therefore very useful as a fill-in if needed, and yet there is something quite interesting to be learnt from it. For many people, grey hair is a fact of life. It's a sign that we are getting older and that our bodies are going through change. To understand why hair turns grey, we must first need to understand why it has colour in the first place. The answer is a special type of cell known as a melanocyte. These produce melanin, the pigment that gives your hair, skin and eyes their distinctive colours. Melanin comes in two forms, camelanin, or black or brown, and pheomelanin, reddish-yellow. Combinations of these two create the spectrum of eye, hair and skin colours found among humans. One way to understand how melanocytes determine hair colour is to think of these cells as tiny printers applying their ink to paper. The paper in this case is our hair strands formed of keratin, the same protein that makes up our fingernails. Just as a printer sprays ink onto a sheet of paper to produce an image, melanocytes produce pigments that are embedded into the growing hair strand, providing them with colour. The melanocytes live within the hair follicle, so each hair strand has its own colour-producing printer. While some people's melanocytes print a lighter ink combination, such as blonde or red, others have darker colour palettes and so have a block of brown colorations. Now that we understand how hair gets colour, we can understand why it goes grey. In hair, grey is not a coloration like any other shade. It is the lack of colouring. The keratin of people with grey hair lacks pigment because these melanocytes have died, revealing the natural grey-white colour of the keratin protein. Because each hair strand has its own melanocytes, some grow grey before others. Exactly what decide which strands go grey first is still unknown. However, age, exposure to chemicals, and even the climate can influence how early the melanocytes die. The strongest influence, however, is written in our genes. The genetic influence of hair colour is so strong that if our parents have grey hair, yours is likely to grey at around the same time as theirs did.
This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia. It has been a long-standing practice of these broadcasts to finish off with something humorous. So, here is today's offering.
Coming out from church one Sunday, a middle-aged woman said to her husband, "Do you think that Nicholson girl is tinting her hair?" "I didn't even see her," admitted the husband. "And that skirt Mrs. Rogers was wearing," continued the woman, "don't tell me you thought that was suitable attire for a mother of two." "I'm afraid I didn't notice that either," said the husband. "Huh?" said the woman. "A lot of good it does you going to church."
Thank you for listening. Now, Murphy has struck again, as usual, in no matter circles, which is quite common. So what I'm doing here at the moment is I'm re-recording Ian's final comments to you. Ian states, "I am pleased to say that as things stand at present, Bruce will continue these broadcasts in 2019. I am somewhat concerned for him trying to do everything himself. So if you can assist him in any way, I am sure that it will be greatly appreciated. I have given Bruce some unused talks that I had left over from this year, so perhaps he will use them, perhaps not. I think I will, actually. We wish you a very pleasant Christmas and New Year. Enjoy the season and please drive carefully. 73 from us. Bruce, VK3UV.
And Ian, VK3JS.
This concludes our session this month. All being well, we shall be back with you on Monday, the 4th of February 2019. Until then, keep well, smiling, and operating your equipment. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia, saying 73 and listing now for any check-ins and callbacks.